everybody. It's Mike Jeffers, Chicago Jazz Magazine, and welcome to the Chicago Jazz Audio Experience Podcast here on ChicagoJazz.com. I am pleased to be talking with David Marienthal. He and I have been talking for, three, 4 years about this project that he's been working on. It's really coming to fruition. It's called Mr. Kelly's Chicago. It's a film, and we just talked a little bit off air, and it's going to be submitted to the Chicago Film Festival and a whole bunch of other things, so I'm going to let him fill us in on that. But he's got a show coming up that benefits the film, July 29th at City Winery, 1200 West Randolph Street, called The Women of Mr. Kelly's. Now, Mr. Kelly's, for those of you that have heard the name that might not be so familiar with it, was one of the hottest clubs in Chicago from 1953 until 1975. They featured a lot of the jazz artists from that era: Billie Holiday, Ella Fitzgerald, Sarah Vaughan, just to name a few. But I'm going to let David fill us all in on everything. David, thanks for jumping on today.
So good to talk to you, Mike. I know we've been in this project together for several years, and you do such a great job of bringing jazz into the present. You've really been a model for keeping the jazz legacy that was Mr. Kelly's and London House alive into the present time. So it's fun to share this journey with you.
Well, I appreciate that. And I want to talk a little bit about the show first, and then we'll delve into the history of Mr. Kelly's. But just right off the bat, on the front end of this interview, let's talk a little bit about this show. So, a tribute to the many of the greatest performers of the 20th century. I'm reading off the press list here. You have a lot of the who's who as far as the female vocalists here in Chicago, and they're doing this tribute. So why don't we talk a little bit about, how important Mr. Kelly's was to featuring all of these different artists and really getting them exposure at a time when not a lot of clubs might have been featuring some of these, especially the female vocalists. And then we'll wrap it back around to how this show came about.
Well, that'd be great. This is our fourth show where we brought Mr. Kelly's back to life and produced them with Daryl Nitz and Daryl Nitz Entertainment. And the first two at City Winery were dedicated to Ella Fitzgerald and her 1958 album that was recorded at Mr. Kelly's. And the second one was dedicated to Sarah Vaughan, who recorded both at Mr. Kelly's and the London House. The third one we did at Gibson's, where we featured Denise Tomasella and Bob Mamet as songstress and jazz pianist, and then brought in a new comedian named Kay Wink. So Mr. Kelly's, every night of the week, except for Monday, I guess, when it was dark, had two or three shows a night where they would feature a stand-up comedian and a jazz singer, and you could walk in and see Richard Pryor and Della Reese, Sarah Vaughan and Bob Newhart, the Smothers Brothers and Carmen McRae, Nancy Wilson and Mort Saul, and it was a very intimate club, around 200 seats, and it was, it did appeal to a lot of different types of people. You could get in for a drink at the bar or sit on the bleachers for $2.50, or you can have an elegant dinner. The food was great, and it was really really something that isn't around anymore, where it was a night on the town that went for anywhere from conventioneers to prom kids to people celebrating their special events in their life, and it was a real fixture in Chicago.
Let's talk a little bit too. I mean, you're right as far as all of that goes. There's nothing like that in Chicago anymore, obviously. But let's talk a little bit about your relationship
now. In the world.
Or in the world, yeah, right, exactly. But why don't you talk a little bit about how you're connected to Mr. Kelly specifically?
Well, my father, George Marienthal, founded the clubs in 1953. Actually 1946, where my father and uncle opened the London House, which was at the corner of Wacker and Michigan, the site of the Fort Dearborn military, the start of Chicago, mm-hmm. in the London Guarantee Building. And they opened it as a steakhouse and restaurant. And until 1953, they were a very successful restaurant. And in 53, they brought in live jazz entertainment, starting with Chicago's Barbra Carroll and Audrey Morris. And they started with bringing the greatest jazz pianists, the greatest jazz combos in the country, to the corner of Michigan and Wacker on the river. And mm-hmm. this was right in the heart of the advertising. The Sun-Times and Tribune were right across the street. And it was really, the place to be seen. And they'd start out with, drinks after work and then go into the late evening with the likes of, Oscar Peterson recorded four albums there. Mm-hmm. Herbie Hancock, McCoy Tyner, Coleman Hawkins, just any jazz pianist you could think of, Errol Garner, George Shearing, and it was really known as a piano room in that respect. Mm-hmm. And Ramsey Lewis started out walking by as a young man on his way to his piano lessons, and ended up becoming the house band for years, and then went on to his well-known national career. Chicago's Judy Roberts got started there as one of the first women pianists, and she opened for Oscar Peterson and George Shearing, and she went on to her great career.
Mm-hmm.
So it was all different types of people were in there, and in the early evenings you might find families and businessmen after work, conventioneers from all over the nation. And then into the later nights, you found the real, jazz fans. And of course, this was back when two or three shows a night was not uncommon, and the clubs closed at 4 o'clock, and everybody got dressed up. And
that's because I think some of the younger listeners can't even relate to that. But for those younger listeners, there actually was only like three television channels at that point. So people actually went out.
Right.
They went out. They hung out. So it was almost like if you had two or three shows a night and you had a comedian or you had a band playing three nights, by the time you had dinner, and watched the show, it's almost like you're watching three primetime programs and now it's like midnight, you're going to bed. And that actually happened where people actually went out to see entertainment and frequent places. So, it was like a norm for people to be out till midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning every single night and then get up and go to work, right?
Definitely. And then, it's not like at all that London House and Kelly's were in a vacuum. There were, there were 40 jazz clubs downtown.
Mm-hmm.
And both Kelly's and London House were known as the creme de la creme in that sense, where after you got done playing the cellars and the cafes and, the clubs on both, on the South Side, of course, had a vibrant entertainment scene. You arrived at Mr. Kelly's. Ramsey said it best where, he said, to get to Carnegie Hall, the old joke is, practice, practice, practice. And the same thing was said about, the London House. How do you get to the London House? And, so it was really, the place to be for jazz in Chicago.
So,
and then in,
I was going to say, so on, I was going to ask how they, yeah, I was going to ask how they opened up Mr. Kelly's if they're so successful, but it's in the same town. That had to be something that they had to really think about because, were they creating direct competition against themselves when they opened up Mr. Kelly's now to have two clubs like that?
Well, I think back then Rush Street and this Kelly's is at the form at where Gibson's restaurant is now at Bellevue and Rush.
Mm-hmm.
And, that was really uncharted territory. Rush Street was, half Skid Row, half entertainment district. And they again opened a class jazz joint on that street. And so I think it was pretty much a different neighborhood there.
So they pretty much almost put that flag down, and all of the clubs that were there in the 60s and 70s probably came in because they started Mr. Kelly's and they started to prove a point over there. And then that probably influxed and allowed Rush Street to grow the way it did. I didn't never realize that.
Well, Rush Street was, as, Dickie Smothers set, the adult playground back then. And so it was, you'd have Mr. Kelly's, which was a class nightclub, but you'd also have it right next door to a strip club, coffee shops, other jazz sellers, adult bookstores. And it was, as well as, grocery stores and stuff, because it was a real residential labor as well. So it was a different animal. And, the conventioners did go down there and, walked up and down the streets and drank. And it was, kind of a New Orleans scene. And but Kelly's really was, known as the premier joint.
Mm-hmm. So what was their concept? And this kind of wraps us back to this show that's coming up on July 29th at City Winery, The Women of Mr. Kelly's. So we talked about London House, and really, I mean, there are a lot of recordings that were recorded at the London House that, you mentioned Oscar Peterson. I think some of his greatest recordings were at the London House. Just listening to that trio live, what a capture in time that is, and the fact that they recorded that and did four different recordings there. I mean, that's incredible. But now moving over to Mr. Kelly's, they seem to focus, as I'm, kind of reading a little bit about Mr. Kelly's, that was more like they had a concept that they wanted to bring in vocalists at Mr. Kelly's specifically so that they could feature more vocalists. So maybe it wasn't the direct competition with London House.
It definitely was a different format. They opened, actually, Mr. Kelly's with just piano bar. And then in 1955, they had a big fire and they remodeled and they came up with this concept of comedy and jazz vocalist every night, and they stuck with that. And it wasn't in direct competition. In fact, the one reason this is said that the London House stayed only instrumental is because you needed a separate license to present vocalists.
Oh, really?
And so they didn't have the separate license for the London House, and they did for Mr. Kelly's. And it's just, the people that went through there range from Billie Holiday, Onita O'Day cut an album there. The early, Ella Fitzgerald was there every year, Sarah Vaughan every year, and again, that's something that you can't believe at this point, is that all these entertainers stayed for 2 weeks minimum.
Wow.
Both the London House and Mr. Kelly. So it was really a residency. And Sarah Vaughan at one point was coming back a couple times a year for 2 weeks. And so they, it was really a family type atmosphere too. I mean, the entertainers got to know the staff, the regular customers, and the Marienthal brothers did welcome, people of all economics and all races. It was one of the first to have a African-American servers. Welcome African-American patrons and a mixed audience. And it was, it was kind of an island amidst, a lot of racial segregation and racial strife around the city. And they did, in terms of the music, that's, your jazz, but the stand-up comedy, it was just, unbelievable. They're starting with Mort Saul, who was really the first political comedian that, is the forefathers of all the John Daly's and all the current crop of comedians. Mm-hmm. To Shelley Berman. There were six comedy albums that were cut there, starting with Mort Saul, going through Bill Cosby and Flip Wilson, the Smothers Brothers, Freddie Prinze. And so these were seminal albums when, modern stand-up comedy was being invented, and it was right there at Mr. Kelly's. Robert Klein, we interviewed him for the movie, and he talked about being there with Sarah Vaughan, and he said, he's played a lot of gigs his whole life, but that was the only gig where for 2 weeks he never missed one song of Sarah Vaughan's.
Wow.
Of course.
Well, I mean, and for the fact that they're showcasing comedians, I mean, that was kind of like revolutionary at that point too, and then tying it in with with jazz after, or even a performance. I mean, it could have been anybody. I know the Pointer Sisters were there, and Barbara Streisand, Bette Midler. I mean, so it was a mixture of vocalists that were there. But to tie in that comedy element opening up, I mean, that still happens today. There's the Dave Chappelle opens up for you know, rock bands, or rock bands now open up for Dave Chappelle because he's gigantic. But, you know, my point is that that's like a format that's stuck around even into the 21st century.
Definitely. And that, you know, it wasn't always the, you know, sometimes the singers, you know, there was a lot of, in fact, we've interviewed a lot of local singers that opened up for comedians there. And, you know, it was, I know the story about Nancy Wilson and Woody Allen were on the bill together. And one night Nancy Wilson was on the top of the marquee. And then the next night they had to go outside and literally change the marquee and put Woody Allen on top.
That whole scene is amazing. I mean, and you mentioned Richard Pryor. I mean, these are guys, like, if you're catching, like, you know, for our audience now, it would have been like seeing, like, Jerry Seinfeld for 2 weeks opening up for a famous jazz musician at, like, the Jazz Showcase or something. Like, that's how intimate it would have been, right? Because it's about 150, 200 seats. You're sitting there, and for 2 weeks, every single night, this person, which then 10 years later is making feature films like Richard Pryor or somebody. I mean, it's amazing that this whole scene was happening.
Yeah, the Marienthal brothers, particularly Oscar Marienthal. My father, Oscar, was more the entertainment guy. My father was a little bit more the restaurant and business. But they had such an eye for talent where, you know, they did bring in Barbra Streisand, you know, when she was not, you know, not known as Barbra Streisand. And they signed her for a 2-week contract, I believe at like $500 a week, and for 10 shows a week.
Wow.
And you know, they did sign these options, so they would bring them back, you know, once they became stars, they were able to bring them back with these options. And many of the performers came back because they liked to play the clubs too. I mean, that you know, Ella Fitzgerald came back. She was already, you know, in the 40s and 50s, she was already a huge star.
Mm-hmm.
But she just loved the room so much, and she loved my father and uncle. She wore a string of pearls that they gave her for her whole career. And, you know, they just had real, real fondness. And that's why we've had such good luck with the documentary film, interviewing some of these stars, because they just, you know, as soon as I mention, you know, George and Oscar, they'll be willing to pick up the phone and sit down and talk to me for an hour. So it's been great.
You know, and that's one of those things, and we should talk a little bit about this too. And I always find it fascinating, but when you know, I mean, I obviously worked on Joe Siegel's biography book with him for a couple of years, and it's amazing because nowadays there's a handful of club owners, I mean, in Chicago and probably not much more around the country, that are still booking things and that the artists have a friendship with. You know, it's like fun to go and hang out with Dave Gemmelo at the Green Mill for some of these heavy duty guys that maybe could play Symphony Center, but they'd rather be at the Green Mill, or they'd rather be with Joe Siegel at the Jazz Showcase. Your father and his brother had that relationship. That was like, they were like, it was like family, I would assume. Like Ella Fitzgerald, she'd come into town because it's like, she could probably play lots of places, but she's like, I love hanging around with these guys. These guys are straightforward. They're like family at this point because, you know, it all works together and it's fun. And it's one of those opportunities that a lot of these musicians that came into Mr. Kelly's or the London House got an opportunity to really play high-end stuff in an intimate room with some really good people that ran the place. And they probably felt like it was more friendship rather than a business thing, right?
Well, it certainly was that, where they were, you know, they had a great house band always, Larry Novak, Johnny Frigo, Marty Rubenstein, Dick Reynolds. And so that, you know, they were a real camaraderie there. And, you know, as you say, there are a handful of club owners that really, you know, that really created this friendship. And, but we have to remember the flip side of that is there was a lot of impresarios that were just as your stereotype of impresarios that weren't paying on time.
Right.
That would screw their they're entertainers. And you know, so it was, you know, especially for a lot of these people that were coming, you know, out of the other circuits, to really work with somebody that respected them as entertainers, was, you know, really refreshing. I know Herbie Hancock was at the London House, and he actually had a month residency at the London House.
Wow.
And it was definitely a story, because he came in more with his earlier work of Maiden Voyage and stuff, which was much more lyrical. And he was really trying out the Mahavishnu Orchestra work at the London House, which was not, you know, which my father and some of the patrons definitely had some, you know, adjustment to make. But they made the adjustment, and this is covered in Herbie's biography. And, you know, he even started to appeal to some younger jazz listeners, and they were able to, you know, develop a new clientele out of that. But, you know, there was a lot of that. There was, you know, when Richard Pryor, you know, I still can't imagine Richard Pryor, you know, when he came into Mr. Kelly's, he was much more collegiate, much more a Bill Cosby type act. And, you know, with the 68 riots and the turmoil in the country, he became the authentic Richard Pryor. And he came back to Mr. Kelly's, and he was performing in front of, you know, Middle America conventioners and prom kids. You know, I can't believe I've talked to so many people that went to their prom at Mr. Kelly's, and they saw Woody Allen for their prom. I mean, I can, you know, it's hard to believe, or Richard Pryor, you know, and these are 17-year-old kids. But somehow, you know, this was, you know, what was changing America at that point.
Wow. Well, and so this show coming up Monday, July 29th, City Winery, the Women of Mr. Kelly's. Let's talk a little bit about this now. You know, this is going to be the fourth show that is based around, you know, the different clubs. And this one is going to be, it sounds like it's going to be a mixture of a lot of different music rather than just focusing on a Billie Holiday or an Ella Fitzgerald or Sarah Vaughan or something like that. Sounds like there's going to be a whole mix of things. So I know that, You've put these things together. What was the concept behind doing this kind of a show where you're going to feature all these different styles?
Of course, Daryl and I wanted to, you know, honor all the great women performers that were at Mr. Kelly's. And, you know, Daryl has such a great group of local jazz singers or singers here in Chicago that we had no problem putting together. Anne Burnell, Frida Lee. Frida Lee's going to do Ella Fitzgerald and Sarah Vaughan. Anne Burnell's going to do Julie London and Cass Elliott. Holly McGuire's doing Diana Washington and Nancy Wilson. LaShera Moore's Natalie Cole and Della Reese. Susan Petrie's doing Julie Wilson and Dorothy Loudon. Margaret Murphy Webb, Morgana King and Dionne Warwick. Michelle Thomas, Carmen McRae, and Denise Tomasello, who does a wonderful Bette Midler and Barb Streisand, and then our own Judy Roberts, who did actually play at the London House, as I say, is going to be doing Audrey Morris and Anita O'Day. So it's a great lineup, and it is, you know, it is going to be a tribute where, you know, these, you know, current artists are going to be reinterpreting these greats, and, you know, it's going to be a lot of fun.
And so this is on the 29th. I mean, this is like just straight through. Everybody's coming in and out. Is there a house band? I know Mark Burnell is directing it, it says. So I know his house band is probably going to be there, I would assume.
Right. We're going to have Mark Burnell as music director on piano, and Joe Policastro on bass, and Phil Grattu on drums.
Mm-hmm.
And Daryl Nitz is the host. And he just, you know, it's just, you know, these other two shows both got, you know, great reviews and standing ovations. And it's, you know, I don't know how to describe it. It's just such great camaraderie with these women that just have such an affinity for this music. And, you know, they have no, you know, it's part of their honor to, you know, give heritage to their predecessors.
Oh, sure. I mean, a lot of them were influenced by
their own way.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of them were influenced, obviously, by all of these great artists. So it's always interesting to me to hear someone that's established perform music that influenced them to become a musician and to push themselves to become a professional musician and get on the level where they're all at. So it's going to be a great show. So that's July 29th, citywinery.com/Chicago. We'll link all that stuff up in the podcast linking as well. But also, let's just get a little update on what's happening with the film, because you said that it's being, before we came on, it's being submitted to the Chicago Film Festival, and there's a whole bunch of exciting things potentially coming up here in the very near future. Why don't you fill everybody in on that?
Yeah, it's been a long process over several years now, but we have over 100 interviews, and we just got done with Lily Tomlin this past year, and we just have a rough cut or a fine cut that we submitted to the Chicago Film Festival for premiere in October. We're working with WTTW to air it in early 2020 on PBS. And so it's coming to fruition. And I just can't tell you how entertaining this film is going to be with all these great interviews of, you know, Richard Klein and Lainey Kazan, David Steinberg, Dick Cavett, interspersed with, you know, some wonderful photographs, original vintage photographs we found. And all the history that went along with those times. It is definitely viewing the era of the 50s and 60s through the lens of Mr. Kelly's and London House. And then the Marienthal brothers did open a third venue called the Happy Medium Theater, which was dedicated to sketch comedy before, you know, in the era of Second City being invented. And Stiller and Mara performed there for a year, and Nichols and May. And so that was, you know, also, you know, part of their legacy. And it's just such a, you know, so to look it through all, you know, all the political and racial changes and social changes that happened in those times through the lens of this, you know, really community in a way, nightclub, is, you know, it's a fascinating story.
Yeah, and I was going to say, and you sent along a sizzle reel, and it's up on Vimeo, I believe. But maybe I can link this up where I dropped the podcast on ChicagoJazz.com. But it's about a 5-minute sizzle reel, kind of previewing the Mr. Kelly's Chicago, and it's fascinating just watching the 5 minutes. I wanted a lot more once I saw that. I mean, it's the stories that these guys are telling. I mean, you're interviewing Woody Allen. You've got, I can't even remember, Ramsey Lewis is on, you know, just the sizzle reel itself. I mean, it's incredible. So, I mean, just for an hour or so, having this be a feature film is going to be, it's really, it's amazing because, you know, you always hear Mr. Kelly's, London House, Mr. Kelly, but you don't really connect things. But this film is connecting that history to today so people can understand the power of this. I mean, it changed people's careers like overnight. It was incredible.
Well, it's been a real, you know, it's been a real journey for me because although, you know, I've been fascinated by it my whole life, you know, I really did not, I didn't know until I started talking to some of these people, until I started, you know, really doing this research. And we have a great director in Ted Bogosian, who's done a lot of work for PBS, Scott Dumbler, who's our editor, works with Rick Bayless and Chaz Ebert here in Chicago, and then our architect, our historian, Adam Karsten out of Loyola University. These guys have just uncovered such unbelievable. I mean, and it's every week. And we you know, I couldn't imagine there were Billie Holiday recordings from Mr. Kelly's.
Wow.
I mean, it's, you know, Steve, you know, who knew Steve Martin was an opening act?
Yeah. Right. Wow.
You know, and then stories, you know, and literally stories about my father and uncle. We just talked to Bill Boggs, who had a big career as a newscaster out east. And, you know, my father at Happy Medium Theater really started him out in his 20s with the Patches and Targes show, and just had faith in him to put together a whole show. And, you know, he went on to a big career in journalism.
Mm-hmm.
So there's been so many of those people that started out on the staff and that just went on to big careers and really were 20th century influencers.
Well, it's really amazing. And this show is going to be incredible. So July 29th, Monday, City Winery, citywinery.com/Chicago. David, thanks for jumping on with me today. It's been great. The Women of Mr. Kelly's, you don't want to miss this 7:30 show. So, and City Winery is a great spot too. I mean, to see anything, if you haven't been over there, I mean, the sight lines are incredible. It's just a very fun, relaxed atmosphere. The sound is great. So it's a perfect spot to see something like this.
Well, I think, yeah, it's going to be a great show. And, you know, you can see our sizzle roll at WW, Mr. Kelly's, Mr. Spelled Out, Chicago.com, Mr. Kelly's Chicago. And a lot of other information, some great photos and blog posts on that website. And also sign up for our mailing list so you can be the first to know about the premiere of the film.
Yeah, definitely. And we'll link that up below, too, in the podcast and also on ChicagoJazz.com and all that good stuff. And, well, thanks for jumping on today. And hopefully I will see you on Monday, July 29th, and hopefully a lot of our listeners will as well. And, man, congratulations on everything. I know you and I talked years ago, and it's been quite an undertaking, but it's got to feel great to see it actually come to fruition, and it's moving, and so many great things are happening with it. So congratulations.
All right, well, thank you so much, Mike, and yeah, it's so much fun to have you and like-minded souls sharing this journey. That makes it all worthwhile.
Oh, definitely. And everybody, thanks for listening to the Chicago Jazz Audio Experience. Of course, get more information at ChicagoJazz.com, Chicago Jazz Magazine. Until next time, hopefully we will see you somewhere out on the scene.